Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures down 2. Well, that'll change because we have to buy the dip and we're down 2, so we've got to buy the dip. That's our. I'm not so sure if that's ever been an investment strategy, but it is now, Manny.
I buy like a bean dip or a nice queso dip.
Yeah, the dip. Buy the dip. But there's so many different kinds of those dips.
French onion?
It's French onion is good.
Always been a winner. Now, do you,
My mom used to make, cream cheese dip, and it was really good. Now, and that was before the days of being able to buy it soft. So you'd take the brick of cream cheese, and it took a little work with, add just a little milk to get it to the right consistency and work it with a fork until it was nice and smooth. Then you throw in a little bit of garlic powder, maybe a little bit of onion, and it was like the most delicious chip dip ever.
Well, if you do your own with the, you do it ahead of time, and you take your onion soup mix and wing it in the sour cream and let it sit, for a couple hours, that's always a winner too. Yeah, hard to screw that one up.
I agree. That sounds good.
The, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I am, just living large. It's Friday here. except for a small problem. It looks like that there is a leak in the line that runs between my well and my house.
Who's drinking your water?
The pump wants to kick on about every 2 minutes and run for a little while, and the water has nowhere to go, so it just works its way out the leak and builds up outside the house. So I have to keep it unplugged unless I want to use the water, like to take a shower or use the bathroom or even make some coffee.
Sounds like you would need this as a call to the well guy.
Already made the call to the well guy. Won't see him till next week, though.
Everybody's busy that's working, because everybody else is not working, because they're worried about protesting or something. Just saying.
Well, you know what? We do what we got to do to get by.
Yes, we do what we have to do. I'm going over the Fed speech yesterday, and I can't even begin. How do you try and be an economist for 40 years, and you see somebody say something like that, and you know it's going to end poorly. You hope it doesn't.
What did he say? It's probably the speech I watched the least.
Well, it basically said
that... least attention to yesterday.
Well, basically said that since he can't seem to get back to this 2% inflation, which, of course, anybody with a brain knows that he's been way past 2% for a decade now.
Maybe he means lower to down to 2%.
No. Since he hasn't been able to get to the 2%, this is all BS. But anyway, but they're basically saying is they're going to pump asset prices up for the election, and therefore they're going to keep rich people rich, and they're going to hopefully to get Trump elected again, which is really what they're doing. I mean, if Greenspan would have done the same thing,
doesn't he realize that the Biden campaign is doing a good enough job of that already?
Oh, I know. Oh, there's no doubt about that. But I mean, if Greenspan would have done that for Bush 1, I don't think Clinton would have won. Right, so the Fed has... What the Fed can do is, I don't think... They can screw things up, okay? But by and large, they can time things. I mean, if you're going into a business cycle recession, this essentially would basically screw Jimmy Carter. The people who ran the Fed came to him, and this is in the... I have a book about the history of the Fed and so forth. They came to him and they said, we're going to have a recession. We can delay it till after the election if you want us to, basically. Because we can pour money in. Because you can't ever fight you're not going to fight the inevitable, right? But when we talk about these kinds of recessions that are normal, and you can make them a little better, a little worse, that kind of thing. So he said, no, well, whatever's happening, just let it happen. You know, the election will take care of itself. Well, it didn't. Okay.
So, and, or it did.
But, or it did, no. Whatever, wherever you want to. Well, I mean, Reagan's first
but,
term.
You know, look, Carter's problem was that he looked so feckless to do anything about anything. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of the confidence that you instill.
Yes.
It's the ability to articulate a positive message and say, here's where we're going. And Carter was totally incapable of that. He always did the woe is us, and we have a great national malaise, and all those kinds of things. And that just doesn't go. That's not what you want out of your leaderships. Leaders are optimists. Good leaders are optimists. They never think anything's going to stop them, and they give everybody else that impression. And that's not, you know, that wasn't Jimmy Carter. So you can say the Fed might have changed the election, but really it was, you know, Jimmy Carter did himself in.
Well, what I'm saying is he did not ask the Fed to alter the economic policy they were pursuing for his election.
Yeah, well, okay. So and I say good for him. He's a moral, ethical ex-president.
Yeah.
So he became a moral and ethical ex-president.
Yeah, basically.
So
well, but I mean, it's you are correct, and you're. I mean, if you walk down the street and you were to interview anybody who was, you know, not necessarily even around at the time, but looks at history in the rearview mirror and thinks they got it all figured out, if you were to ask, by the way, who was stronger and who knew more about the military, Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter? I'm going to say 99% of the people are going to say Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan made movies.
Yeah,
made movies during the war.
Yeah, he was, what was he, a nuclear sub-commander or something
went to the Naval Academy and graduated, and he was in worked for Admiral Rickover. I don't know how much he was on blue water experience he had, but Rickover ran the nuclear division, right? But I mean, there was no comparison in military knowledge between him and Reagan, but he sure didn't look like it. I agree with you.
Well, he was also a what do I want to say? He was also a you know, just overly detail oriented.
Yeah.
Now, you know, being detail oriented is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that you can't wallow in it. What you need to do is you orient your people towards the details that need attention, and then you let them do it. In Carter's case, he would wallow in the details himself and never be able to articulate a big picture.
Well, I think when people would stuff,
you know, and those were criticisms at the time. By the way, that's not a lot of Monday morning quarterback in here. Those were things that people were saying at the time.
He did sort of the same thing that that Trump did. To be honest with you, he didn't trust anybody in Washington, which had probably always been untrustworthy. So he brought a lot of people from Georgia with him, and then had trouble dealing with the place. You know, you can only bring. I mean, if you're going to deal with Congress, you have to have some people that know who the people are in Congress, right? And where they are, and what you know what they're looking for, and what they're you know what they respond to. So you have to have knowledge enough of the place that you dislike, I guess, to at least deal with it, right? Because you do have to deal with it.
Yeah, and what was he? You know, by trade, he had been governor of Georgia, but. But what was he by trade? He was a farmer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, much like Trump, you know, Trump ran what is essentially a family business. He had lots of other people involved in it, but essentially it was a family business. And that, you know, he trusts, and you could see that on display, you know, this week, that, you know, it still is, you know, he still is operating essentially a family business. He just has the family all involved in the political operation now. But you know that's who he trusts, and he has a handful of other people that he trusts, and then he goes through everybody else. There have been a few people who he's brought into government that he probably didn't know as well as some of the other appointees who have been there for the long haul, whether it be you know Mnuchin or whether it be Ben Carson or some of those people. So some people, you know, some people manage to make it into the circle of trust. But it's you know it's a a little weird to watch it because he gets enamored of these people. He says such wonderful things about them, and then they let him down, and off they go. You know, it's like everything is still an episode of his TV show. You're here until you're fired.
It is a very difficult. But you have to deal with this, and I don't know that. I always thought after reading, you know, some books like A Man Called Intrepid, where a guy would read, you know, the reports coming back from the British Secret Service, he said he would read the equivalent of a Victorian novel every day. But the man was stone cold brilliant. I mean, I couldn't do that. I mean, I don't know if I ever known anybody who could. But he was also a brilliant mathematician. He had a background that like nobody else had. You know, those are some of the guys that worked their way to the top in wartime. You get rid of the peacetime generals, and these other guys worked their way up because people are afraid, right? So but I think when you get reports to come by you, you can't be in the detail, but once in a while you got to read one because you got to know whose reports you can trust. And if you all of a sudden you do read one and you find the numbers don't add up and stuff like that, there's a guy or a girl, you know, you can't trust anymore. I mean, I know at, you know, the Allied Van Lines, my first job, I would do reports, special reports for the vice president of finance, and he just come on my desk, or you're done, he'd grab it, he'd walk into the meeting, and he'd start reading it to the board. And the guy'd say, "Who did that?" He goes, "Tom did it. I don't have to check it." But that's the reputation I wanted. That when I was done with something, it was done right, and nobody had to get out the calculator and see if I knew how to multiply. And you can, but when you want that kind of reputation, you got to make sure you never screw up, and the details are there, and the footnotes are there, and everything adds up, right? Because you want your work. I mean, I always had the feeling, he goes, if I need to check it, I don't need you. I learned a lot from that guy.
Yeah, big strong Polish. Ain't that true?
Yeah. You know, if I need to check it, I don't need you. How many bosses tell that to people now? You know, it better be right. That's why
well,
I got you.
You know, where I have always given the I don't need you was as I try to hire people who are different from me. I want people who don't do what I do, because if you do exactly what I do, I don't need you. Same thing, same. You know, but I'm talking skill set, but the same thing applies. Is, you know, I've always wanted people. You know, I don't like to be as detail oriented. I'll do it. It's hard for me to get oriented, so the way I will work is if I really have to dive in. For I'll give you an example, I wrote the final case for a course rewrite over the, during the summer, and I invented it out of whole cloth. Wrote it, and you really, if you're doing case writing, you have to cover every angle. You can't leave a hole in it. So it takes me forever to get my mind oriented towards doing that. Now, once I get started, it's like, you know, see you in 10 hours. I'll get totally immersed in it, but it's hard to do because that's not my normal inclination. So I always wanted to hire people who did that by nature, so I didn't have to force myself into a mode that wasn't part of my comfort zone.
Well, this guy was,
and you know, I think that's the same mindset though. Yeah. You need people you can trust to do something you don't do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know what. This guy was funny, Kevin. He was I was a pretty decent handball player, but I never was an A, and I was a pretty decent B because I couldn't kill with both hands. I mean, basically, that's the definition of an A handball player. But I was in really good shape, and I could volley with anybody. So one day he finds out I'm a handball player, and I get this call. Hey, I think I need a game. Well, this guy kicked my ass every which way but sideways. Big, strong Polish guy, and so I'm getting like 5 points. But I'm every play is a is a 7 or 8, you know, a hit shot. Well, he wasn't just calling me on the server. And I mean, he's sweating to beat the band. When he was at the end of the game, he couldn't have been more happy. God, it's the best workout I've gotten forever. Thanks. They go, Bobby, kick my ass. I never got more than 5 points. That is all right. Look at what you did. I mean, it was a great game. So next week I'm getting like 8 or. But the funny part, he gets back to the office and all of a sudden his secretary calls me. She goes, "What'd you do to Bob?" I go, what do you mean? She goes, he hasn't been this calm and relaxed ever. You better play every week with the guy. Everybody loves him. But he needed to go out and play handball once a week. And, you know, between the work and he had a big time job and, you know, he had a pretty good sized family between all that. He just needed to play handball once a week just to let it out.
If it made him easier to be around, you should have had all the, all of his employees kick in to get you to go play.
But I think I'm one week.
Missed opportunity, Tom.
Well, 1 week I got 15. I felt like I just beat up Muhammad Ali. I mean, it's, but you know, it was, anyway, it was good stuff. And, when you have, that's why I really wonder how far we're going to go with this, you know, kind of work from home stuff. And I see the people that are working and aren't working. And we were just talking to Maddie and I about this place I park. One of the lots, does a lot of work or did do a lot of work for people coming down for the immigration offices right over here, or was. And all the people that came down and they were looking, you know, become citizens and stuff. They have to go there and do all their paperwork. And what are those guys doing, Kevin? I mean, you can't tell me that's working as smoothly from home. And these people don't have computers and whatever. I mean, that's why they're trying to become citizens. I mean, some of them might, but, how is all that kind of stuff working? I mean, these embassies, I mean, I don't, my brother was telling me yesterday about the problems he's having buying a bicycle tire. I mean, the supply chain is destroyed just about everywhere. It took me a month to get a stove, for God's sake, just a regular old white stove. Does anybody have a clue the depths of where we are here? I don't. I mean, I'm just asking. I mean, it just seems like every time I hear these stories, I'm just getting things are...
You know, I think a lot of people don't, with some exceptions. So, for instance, you know, you shop at Meijer, I shop at Meijer. And we ought to get them up. We got to get them a sponsor of the show. if we're going to plug them so often. But you go into Meijer, any time from noon on, good luck getting some paper towel.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, that's out because, and it's a supply chain issue. And also, if you live in a small home like I do and you don't have a lot of places to store stuff, good luck getting less than, like, you know, a 24-pack of toilet paper.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think people at least if it doesn't dawn on them what's going on here, it's that we have limited supply chains, so we're doing what we can mass produce the easiest, but it's like a pick one, one size is going to have to fit all for a while. It's those kinds of things, and I think people do realize that because hoarding is really, it's not happening anymore, and not on a wide scale like it was early on. So it's a little weird. It's a little strange, but I don't think people get what it's doing for, like you said, for, you know, getting a stove, getting parts, get the parts you need to do a home repair. All of those kinds of things are totally disrupted, and I think it's really a big opportunity for a lot of U.S. companies. They're going to have competitive unit costs and competitive pricing with the Chinese, but or other overseas sources, but China in particular, where a lot of this stuff is made, and they're going to have to come up with competitive pricing, and that may mean that some of their capital expenditures are going to have 6 or 7 year paybacks instead of two.
Well, that's right.
But if they pay back. I've referred before to infinite game theory. That, you know, the idea is you want to keep playing the game. You don't necessarily have to win it this month or this year.
Well, to get back real quick, I wandered off the reservation like I always do. The DePaul speech, what he essentially said, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this whole inflation theory, Kevin. Hopefully I won't bore the hell out of people, but there's a reason why.
Who you got on coming the second hour?
We got Mike Hart.
Okay. I was just wondering if you have somebody better to talk inflation with than me, because I'm not going to have much to offer.
Actually, you know what?
Go ahead.
Actually, you know what? What I'm going to talk about, though, is you remember, and he doesn't. He's young.
Okay.
What Powell essentially said, and to me it is, I don't want to call a man that, you know, we got 10 more degrees than I do, an idiot, but in this particular thing, he essentially says that since he hasn't been able to maintain this 2% inflation over time, that, and say it's been 1%, that if he goes past the 2% to say 5%, which he didn't really say, but what he implied, and all of a sudden he really runs it faster, that he essentially has inflation in the bank from when it wasn't 2%. Kevin, I can't think of a dumber thing for a Fed chairman to say. I honestly cannot. If I knew where Milton Friedman was buried, I'd go by the grave to hear if they hear somebody spinning around in there.
Well, and that's just not how systems work anyway.
No.
And we are talking about the monetary system. You tamper in the wrong way with something, you make the swings bigger.
Yes.
You don't prevent them, you make them bigger.
Well, I look at, I'm going to make a kind of a horrible analogy here between a pretty serious working economy in the human body, especially a type A stud dude like Maddie, not like me anymore. But when you looked at the American economy and coming out of the war, you had all kinds of innovations. You had baby boomers. You had kids. You had a population that was growing internally, not just people coming off the borders that, you know, people don't like. We had actually people that were welcomed. I mean, I welcome these people, but some people don't. Anyway, I'm not going to go off on that tangent. But the point being is it was a lot of internal growth. And when people went and bought a house, like my stepfather and my mom, they went and bought the house in, 102nd Place. They paid $18,000 for it. And my stepfather was an accountant. He had a good job. He always had a decent job. But he had his degree from DePaul, which he got on the GI Bill. So every year, you had this little bit of inflation, but people also got productivity raises because companies were doing better. People were getting some bonuses. So there was a lot of stuff that was happening to the positive. I mean, you didn't want to be alive then if you had a bad tooth, or you certainly didn't want to be alive then if you had a heart problem because you were bleep out of luck, right? But the medical stuff, even though doctors were good, they were nothing like it is now in terms of...
Oh, you didn't even want a knee injury because it was either live with it or cut your leg wide open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you didn't want any of that stuff. So, but I'm saying, economically, it was essentially nirvana. And what you had was probably 3.5% growth, maybe even 4% some years. And you had a little bit of inflation, 1.5 to 2 to kind of... But it wasn't runaway. It wasn't anything like that. But what it meant was... The combination of the house that they bought for say $18,000, 10 years later it was 26,000. So you never really were underwater on the thing. So there was this little creep of inflation, and it wasn't a bad thing. But people were getting 4% raises along with the economy. So you didn't even really, and your teachers were getting, but everybody was walking forward together pretty much, and. The inflation was one of the things. It just happened to be a part of it. It wasn't anybody's goal. It really meant that the Fed probably was putting a little too much money in their system. But there's no theory ever, Kevin, that says if things are going good or if things are going bad, that the inflation is an indication of something. But nobody would have said that the economy would have been less healthy if that inflation would have been 1% instead of, 1.8 or something. It just happened to be there. But I mean, because Milton Friedman has examples of times when there was deflation, but there was all kinds of innovation and growth in population, where the growth in the country was spectacular. In fact, after the Civil War, we decreased the money supply. There was deflation. Yet it was one of the greatest growth periods in this country as we sucked the greenbacks out of the economy because we want to go back on the gold standard. But so I'm saying this 2% inflation was just part of all kinds of other really good things that were going on. It was never a goal. So, if an asteroid whacks Matty Weber in the head and he's laying there dead, which I hope never happens, and you sit there and go, okay, what does the human body do? Well, the brain tells the heart to beat, but then again, if the heart's not beating, the brain's not going to tell him. And, oh, by the way, you eat, and if you eat, you're going to poop, right? It's equivalent to somebody saying, if we can just get this corpse pooping again, everything else will work. It's just one piece of a major puzzle, and it's not even a main piece in my mind. I mean, those years, that inflation could have been 1%, 1.5%, 2%, 2.5%. It didn't matter because it was less than what people were earning, the productivity stuff. It could have been negative 1%. The Fed could probably have bleeped up, and it could have been negative 1% by infringing on the money supply, and it wouldn't have made any difference. So the idea...
Well, what you're talking about is, as we have discussed many a time on the show, is how Goodhart's Law works. The point being that you aren't trying to move your target, that inflation is an indicator of what's happening. It's not something that you manipulate. It's something that is a result of what's happening. So what you're supposed to be doing in an economy or any other type of system is you're supposed to be saying, what are the things that we do that make this healthy? What are the things that we need to be doing to make this work well? And that will move the rate of inflation. That will move all kinds of indicators. But if you're just trying to move the indicators, there's plenty of ways to do that.
Well,
like manipulate the money supply. That doesn't change a darn thing about the underlying economic activity, unless it serves to discourage it. But it really doesn't do anything that says that we are, that the economy is behaving in a healthier way. It's just moving the rate of inflation, and that doesn't help anything.
Well, but it also becomes very selective. Last time it was in the oil patch because of what the Arab group did, and it started there. But right now it's going absolutely into asset pricing, almost all in the stock market, and it hasn't kicked in the behind at all. The fact that the median wage in this country is still way below almost, living wage. We come right down to it. So it hasn't helped at all 50 to 60 to 70% of the people. Yet, I don't think, right now, we don't seem to care about those people. And you see it in everything here.
Yeah, and has it done anything to improve, supply chains that have taken damage?
What it has done is it's taken this management class and put them so far ahead of the rest of the people that were never coming back, Kevin. Never coming back. It's not even back in the 20s where it was the owners of places that made all the money. Now it's the people who work there and essentially intercept the cash between the regular workers and the shareholders. Does anybody at Commonwealth Edison give a rat's behind about the shareholder? Anybody in power there?
The only way that people care about shares is how does it affect my options?
Well, the share price, yeah, but they're never going to get one of these guys to pay. The idea of people buying stock back, what is the point of that? If it's your shareholders, you just increase the dividend, right? Well, if you want to give money back, if you're making $100 a year per share, which is a lot, say $10 per share a year, and you can find really good things to do with four or five of it, you're supposed to pay the rest out, right? I mean, that to me, you're saying, okay, to the extent that I can make a better return than my shareholders can by investing this money for them, then I keep the money here. To the extent I can't do that, I should give it back to them, right? Because that's
right. And so, as you said, are we ever going to fix this? And the answer is, a big problem that we have is we tend to lurch back and forth in terms of politics. So, every time we elect a different party, a different administration, we change direction again. And what we need it right now is that things are so bleeped up that we need long-term fixes, and we need to be put on a course and stay on the course. And that ain't going to happen because
no.
We have a political system that just is not supporting that, and such a lack of consensus amongst the political class.
I think that's on purpose.
We probably could develop a consensus amongst people, amongst normal people, but we don't have one amongst the politicians.
I think they're preventing it because a lot of people are stealing in the meantime. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ up 17. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Werber on the board. SP Futures up 1175. I'm my page up here, Kevin and Manny. I'm cracking this where this inland storm is going to go. This Hurricane Laura, we're not over with this thing yet. It's going to cause big flooding in Tennessee and maybe it's in the Ohio Valley. Quite a storm. We don't really haven't been that many Category 4s that have hit the country. I'm going to say probably less than 10. Kevin, I don't know. We'll maybe look that up.
But of course, it's 2020, so this is the year we have one.
Right.
That's right.
It's the, yeah, we got, yeah. And then, of course, we use a little rain in California, huh? We're going to flood the Midwest. Dow futures up 122. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 20. So Europe's been really calm. So this, of course, is the time they're normally off over there. I don't know how that's working with people, you know, still in their houses in some places. But anyway, they're not trading. DAX down 18.1%. FTSE up 6, call that flat. CAC around up 2, call that flat. So we're not getting any kind of, whatever direction from Europe. Nikkei down 326. That's a minus 1.4. Is the what's his name? Abe is retiring due to health reasons, right, Kevin?
And it's, yeah, I saw that he was retiring. I did not see the reason.
Yeah, he's resigning because of health reasons. Shanghai up 53. That's 1.6%. Hang Seng up 140.6. Weren't those guys supposed to be fighting Hong Kong and the mainland? That hasn't been on the page for how long either now. I mean, talk about stuff that just flares up and then just kind of disappears, eh? The Bands, 0.74. That's a big
deal. Well, we have to suck up our media time with stupid stuff.
So yeah, absolutely.
If there's room for anything serious, we can have it. I mean, so go ahead and finish the report.
But then we've got, the 10-year is up to 0.75. That's the highest we've seen that in a bit. The Bund only minus 0.40. But get a load of this. Japan almost 0.06. That's wild. It's positive, but getting more and more positive by the day. It's still not much, but it's certainly not negative anymore. Oil down a penny, 43.03. Nothing going on there. Brent down 4 cents, 45.05. Natural gas up a penny, 272. RBOB 128, back from 132 or was the other day. Gold is up $35, 1968. Silver up 64 cents, 27.84. We got copper up 4 cents, over $3, 3.009. And the interesting part is the company that I usually try and buy when the copper is going up isn't really going up very much. It's just trickling, so maybe they hedged it. Who knows? Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue already on the Stevenson, a car in the ditch from the southbound county line road to I-55 northbound. It's apparently on fire with crews on the scene. So that's causing some delays at County Line Road on the northbound side of the Stevenson due to crews putting that car fire out. So keep that in mind if you're heading inbound on I-55. No issues on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Eisenhower looks good, as does the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Suburban tollways are quiet as well. A few issues off the expressways, though. On the west side, Harlem at Armitage, there is a crash. And then south of there, Maple Avenue at 47th Street, there is an accident. Out in the western suburbs, there's a couple of crashes. Butterfield Road at Highland Avenue. And then just northeast of there, York Road at Irving Park, there is a crash as well. But that's it. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, hot and steamy early. Some rain later on. Very similar to yesterday, although a little bit cooler than yesterday. A high of 90. Right now it's clear and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 112 today. Right now it's clear and 89. In sports, it was a quiet night last night with some teams boycotting their games or taking the night off in protest, and others, like the Cubs and Sox, just having a scheduled off day, but not a lot going on. Cubs were off. They're at Cincinnati tonight, 6:10 Chicago time first pitch. White Sox were off as well. They'll host Kansas City tonight down on the south side at 7:10. The Diamondbacks game was postponed, makeup date to be determined. They'll host the San Francisco Giants tonight, 6:40 p.m. local time, first pitch. Chief.
I wonder if they're going to catch any of the outer skin of Hurricane Laura down in Cincinnati with some rain.
It's supposed to rain all weekend there, from what I've read, so I assume that's connected.
Yes. Talk about Tennessee River, Arkansas River, Ohio River, all going to be in trouble maybe.
I even read some reports suggesting that they should just move the series to Wrigley. I mean, there's no fans anyway, and there's been no home field advantage at all. If you look statistically halfway through the baseball season, the home field advantage with no fans is basically gone.
Yeah, well, when you know there's a rainout coming, to sit there with a rainout with nobody in the stands is pretty dumb.
Yeah, if it really looks as ominous as it apparently does on the radar, just move. Play at Wrigley or play somewhere else. I mean, there's no point.
They should rent 80 cars and all drive up here by themselves like they did in St. Louis. Is St. Louis still doing that?
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure.
Jesus. You wonder if they're, I don't know, we wonder if there's stupid old pills. But anyway, how this all we're talking about affects the market is interesting. I mean, because obviously we had Dan Janitas on yesterday. I don't know if you're able to listen in, Kevin, but and he thinks this is going to go on for a while, the market going up. But he's also, I think Dan brings an awful lot of stuff to the table for the show and for his clients, I'm assuming. But he believes, and again, anybody can believe and be wrong, but he believes that before we top out, before the Fed flares this out, whether it's a month, 2 months, 6 months, 10 years from now, that a lot of the companies that have not participated are going to participate. And that's his specialty. It's not really mine, unfortunately. I mean, mine is most people want to be diversified, and I do a lot of index stuff, and I maneuver the risk around with options. I mean, that's a strong part of my game. But it is interesting that he feels that way, because I think he's doing pretty well in digging out some companies that haven't. But sometimes you look around where all the ones that you dig that are good companies, everybody finds out about it, and you're right. Sometimes you go through a period of time when the people buy only a few companies, and they always buy only a few companies, and it's hard to figure out, you know, which one is which. And I think he's right that we're turning a little bit right now. But then again, this week I had a straggler position left over in U.S. Steel and General Motors. Market's going up every day. Those two stocks can't get out of their own way. So Tesla goes up like 5% a day, and General Motors can't move. And yet, the last time I checked, they still sell a lot more cars than Tesla, you know, whatever. But it is, I guess, they put a position.
Do you think, is it possible that that research ain't what it used to be, and that that maybe we just have people that, I mean, it's fine to fall in love with ideas. If you think there's an idea that for the long haul is going to succeed, you know, being first to market isn't necessarily the right way to go, although Tesla's got more than just the cars, so they're a little more diverse than that. But if you have something that you see long haul is going to be a successful product, so even if it isn't right now, that it's worth the investment. Do you think that's what the mindset is, or is the mindset something like we just get enamored of something and everybody rushes to it?
It reminds me a lot of that, a lot of the dot-bomb era. A lot of the trading is momentum trading. I mean, a lot of stuff where Jan, you know, was always talking about on TV, Dr. J, is if all of a sudden somebody takes a big shot in something and they buy 10,000 calls in Tesla or something, which would be a lot of money, by the way. Well, a lot of people now find that out quickly, and people follow the momentum, and all of a sudden everybody's buying. Then the first person buying might catch the person who's making a market short. Now he's chasing. I mean, you can become your own momentum market one way or the other. I mean, do you think every person who buys Tesla or Amazon right now has a clue of what their PE is and when they would expect? I mean, if you're the old Eastern European guy looking at Amazon here, he's going to go, okay, I got to pay $3,400 a share. Let me get this straight. These guys should be making, you know, $250 a year and sending me a check for $100 if I'm going to pony up there. I mean, that's what an investment, even if you're growing, that should be happening at that number. There's no assurance any time in your or my lifetime or Maddie's grandkid that he hasn't even had yet that's going to happen in Amazon. But yet it goes up every day. I mean, if everybody found out that, you know, a Kenyan turtle eggs were going up every day, I would have some people that I could put in there. And these things, I don't even know what they are. I don't even know what kind of turtles, but when the thing's going up every day, what do you think? Oh, let's put something in there. I mean, that's when you have no other place of putting money for income. This whole idea that the Fed forever now we're going to have people who have amassed money. I say amassed money, I'm talking about people like you and I that might have saved $10 a week for their whole life, that has money that, and everybody knows that to build something, to invest, to have a plant, have an investment, to have a new drug for coronavirus or anything else, that part of one of the factors of production you need is capital. Now, why we're deciding that the people who provide that capital right now should provide it to others for free forever, I have no idea, Kevin. It's a total miscarriage of how the thing is supposed to work. Now, in a short period of time, will everybody take one for the team? Sure. But we're talking, it's been 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, and now we're talking another 5 or 6, where, you know, your mom, if she was still with us, or my mom has her money at the bank, she saved her whole life, and people are using and doing stuff with and charging other people credit card interest and stuff, yet she gets, you know, butt kiss. I mean, this is not right. Now, it's not healthy. And, you know, now for the short term, you know, can we get away with it? Sure, but we're not talking short term anymore. We're talking about driving up asset prices because the return on other stuff is zero. I mean, I can't tell you that Amazon's not worth $3,400 when the interest rates are zero. If they paid a dividend of 40 cents, it might be worth $10,000 if you can't get anywhere else, right? I mean, you're totally off the chain of every sort of pricing model, any piece of common sense. And why are we there? I mean, is it making things so much better that we're there? I guess it is if you own Amazon. And the other phenomenon, Kevin, is, and I can't put my finger on this one either, is when I was first started in the business, every company's goal, you know, the telephone, Lucent, those kinds of places, General Motors. Every company's goal was to be widely, to have, if you could have, you know, 10 shares in every family in the country. You wanted your investor base to be very broad. Now, even though we're hearing about a few splits coming this way in Apple and what's the other one that's splitting? It's not Amazon. I mean, one of the other ones is splitting. You want this. If you kick up Amazon or Facebook, you're going to find, you know, 45, 50, 55, I've been having a look lately, percent institutionally held, either in ETFs or in hedge funds or people. I mean, you and I aren't going to go out and buy 100 shares of Amazon. Although with some of these places like Robinhood, we can buy one or two, and that's what's chasing some of it. But I mean, you can't do options against it. You can't protect yourself. We're just balls out long, basically, right? I don't think anybody's going to let you short two shares. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. But we certainly wouldn't. But I don't know how that fits in either. So a lot of stuff, I'm not going to say has changed. It's just different to where, you know, people go, but yesterday I bought one investor, and him and his wife wanted me to basically ratchet up the Protect Index program because they feel like, Dan, that this market's got a little further to go. But they also want to be protected because they do think we're racing toward a cliff at some point, but they don't think we're there yet. Okay, so what I did is I put him in the queues. I bought some puts right at the money, and I doubled up on the call side. I did a 1-by-2 spread where if we go up, you know, 3% next week, he's gonna double up on the way up. And that's what he wants. Now, what the cost of that is, instead of selling the calls to pay for the puts, I did it for like even money. So he's just paying for the puts. So there's all, whatever you do, there's a good side and a bad side of it, of any kind of trade. But as long as people understand that and don't say, you know, and understand what you're doing, or at least why you're, I mean, I don't expect them to pick the strikes and the options. I mean, that's my job. I have a 40-year sense of what those prices ought to be, which they don't have. But I said, what if I get you a position where you're protected? And by the way, I double up on the next 4% next week. That's what I want. Okay, so I did it. But I mean, that's, you know, how all this interchanges. What I'm going to get with this is now when I buy these cues for him yesterday, we bought 500 or 1,000, whatever it was. He's got some money. And, it was, you know, say $250,000. Well, 125,000 of that went in the stocks I just talked about. Because, you know, when you buy the cues, we're pushing 48% is now, Microsoft, Amazon, Netflix. It's those five or six stocks. Well, did I start out yesterday morning to buy Amazon? No, but I did. So the combination of people pouring into these indexes, which are just these stocks, or are getting to be just that stocks, very concentrated, very high priced, to where there are a lot of it's institutionally held. And you can make a case where every day one institution just buys from the other one. They buy a few shares, it goes up, and they're all going to be rich beyond the dreams of avarice 5 years from now, which is what's happening. So all this stuff is kind of coming together, but it also came together in 2000, and all of a sudden we went the other way. Came together
until it fell apart.
Right. So I mean, all these things are quote happening, and everybody's taking their own. Now Dan is saying I'm not going to play in those areas, but now that I have some kind of idea of where the valuation is or isn't, if I can find a place that is paying people some money and is growing and is actually making the dough that I'd like to see in an investment, I don't think I'm going to lose there. And if all hell breaks loose, at least I'm going to get the dividend, and it's not going to drop to the rest of them. And he's absolutely right. That is a spectacular strategy. And if you work hard enough and find those places like he looks like he does, you know, and that's what he does. Now, what I do is I'll go on the indexes, realize the differences, and I'll use the option market to essentially adjust my risk curve, which is a little, which you really can't do. Unless some of the ones he's talking, you're not going to do that in the stocks he's talking about. They're illiquid, they're this or that. So whatever you do, whatever advantage you gain, you lose somewhere else. As I used to say, it's like silly putty. You squeeze it here, it pops out some other place, right? The investment community right now is people pouring money in. Now, I don't know what this guy is going to do when I say this guy, Powell. If he gets, he's had 2.65 consumer price indexes in a row. And his one's coming up, I don't know, a couple of weeks. So say he gets, if he can't clamp down on his CPI people, what if he gets one that's like 1.4? So somebody says, okay, you got 1.4, 0.65, 0.65. Looks to me like we're talking, you know, 2 point something in 3 months, say 2.7. And if we multiply that by 4, where are we at? We're damn near 11.5% inflation. Is that what you meant? Is that okay? Is you're catching up on your twosies? And all of a sudden, I think, and then all of a sudden people are saying, hey, I'm not getting paid enough. Where's my raise? You know, the last thing you want to do is if I'm right in the amount of people that have not participated in this, quote, comeback from 2008, if you start dropping inflation on these people, Kevin, you might as well take the people who just got lashed by this hurricane and I don't know what you want to do with them. You know, throw salt down on their property on top of everything else. I mean, what else can you do to screw somebody, right?
Yeah, so the question is, what do we have to do then to start fixing this? And is there anybody out there who can articulate that? I mean, look, we how long ago was Simpson Bowles? And that was just related to the federal budget.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we commissioned it. You know, that was President Obama commissioned that group. They went and spent all the time, put together a good report. It, you know, it's not everything that I would have wanted, but it was feasible, and it would have cut into the debt, and it would have been fine. And then we said, thank you very much, pretty good report, see ya, and put it away.
There's the thing Carl always talks about, and is, you know, he's not ranting and raving about the COVID, that the big gorilla in the room is medical. You can't go through. You can't,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
You can't be a Fed chair. By the way, I'm working on our 7 to 10 things that Stocks and Jacks is going to put out there that's going to save the country. I've got like 3 of them so far, and I'll pass them around, and we'll. You can't go through life, an economic life, where like one day in the hospital is a year's pay for the average citizen. You can't do that, Kevin. And that's basically
well, and
where
you
we are.
Also can't. And Carl's big thing on it is that you can't keep subsidizing people's poor, bad health habits.
Yeah, that's what insurance is about.
He's on that. Is you know how much of the medical expense do we have? The public medical expense that is just related to people being overweight and diabetic.
Well, I had this long lecture from somebody in the Tripoli Tap of all places by one of the regular people that holds down a saloon, like you know, holds down a bar stool regularly, ranting and raving about you know, because of the COVID, I should, you know, everybody's idea of what other people should do ends at the other person, not at themselves. Like this guy was telling me, you know, I'm concerned about governors shutting things down, and I should be wearing a mask because I'm a little heavy. And blah, blah, blah. And I could have said something like, if I drank like you, I mean, you know, I mean
right.
it's always
well,
the
yeah,
pot called the kettle black,
that
right?
That factors in, too.
I mean, I've had people, you know, health clubs and you know, geez, you don't get, we should only have, like, skinny people. You know, I know an awful lot of skinny people that died a lot younger than me. I mean, it's at some point here, the whole concept, I agree with Carl in some ways, that preventative medicine is something that people should pay more attention to. But when the concept of insurance is, when I was, you know, there was a time, Kevin, you and I both were, we both had, you know, when I went to my physical at Pullman, they said I have a type A body. Everything works fine. I was 28 years old. Blood pressure was fine. Everything was fine. I was 195 pounding. Everything was where it was supposed to be, right? Okay, and I
all original parts.
Yeah, all original, and I paid insurance, and paid in the insurance, or Pullman paid for me, and it was you know $100 a month, and I saw some guys that you know, were outside smoking. Actually, didn't have to go outside to smoke in those days, smoked constantly, and whatever, and their insurance was you know $100 a month, and there were older guys that obviously they had issues, and they're $100 a month. Now it was that's why it was called insurance, and I knew that the chances. Now, of course. I played ball.
Well, and that's how group insurance works.
Yeah,
it's not how the individual insurance market works.
But well, but it, in those works. Days, it did. I mean, it was some of it was on age, certainly on life insurance. But of course, I risked something every day. A day didn't go by. I wasn't playing softball or basketball, so I could easily have you know torn up an ankle or done something, and I didn't, unfortunately. So what I'm saying is now all of a sudden I'm on the upper end of that thing, and guys going, wait a minute. That's not the way we're doing it now. You're paying based on you. Okay. Well, I want to be like Jerome Powell. I want my money back from when I was 25 paying for everybody else. I mean, where are we going with this? Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely fine. My personal opinion, and we went through this as far back as 2010 when it was going on, is that we should have everybody shopping for their own insurance, whether it be in groups where they're members of it, or whether it be as individuals. But everybody should be able to shop for their own. And then the way that we subsidize people who can't afford it, or the elderly, or whomever, is that we funnel their payments into the equivalent of an HSA, so you can shop for what you need and you can shop for what you want, and we don't have to worry so much about then the government subsidizing every bad habit that we have.
I think it's more is
subject to the same market forces as everybody else. But if we want to do it as a Medicaid approach, we can. If we want to do it as a Medicare approach, we can. And those concepts, I think, are really important that we be able to implement that, because it's the only way you're going to put any downward pressure on the cost of insurance and therefore the cost of medical care.
I think I would go, I don't mind that, Kevin, but I would go right now, today. The problem is when you walk into the emergency room and you got a guy making $50 an hour, sews your finger up, the bill is $5,000. There is no way on earth that overhead should be 10 or 20 times what that guy's doing to you. I mean, I don't care if I'm fat, skinny, whatever. I hurt my finger. That should not be that kind of an overhead. And there's way people along the chain that are getting paid. There's insurance companies and stuff's going back and forth. There's too much paperwork. I'm saying you got to get that number down, that if he's making $50 for the hour he's sewing my thumb up, that my bill is 200 and not 2500.
Yeah,
that's the problem right there.
And if you had less dependence on insurance for those kinds of fairly routine situations, you would also get the downward pressure.
Well, but I also we got a dash, Kevin. But I think I'd look at the ivory tower at Rush and Northwestern, and I'd say, who the hell are those people? What are they getting paid? You know,
okay. Well, I won't argue with you on that.
Because I'm saying we need to get back to when you talk about the places you go and these care centers that are way more efficient, there is no ivory tower. It's like how many vice presidents do we need at Commonwealth Edison to pay or people's gas to charge me $50 for a customer fee and not even give me any gas? I mean, why do I have to pay for those people? What are they doing? I went in there and did a time and motion study. I think I'd find much time.
Let's keep subsidizing that, and wonder why prices are so high.
As I used to say, I would reveal much time, little motion. Just saying. S&P futures up. S&P futures up 12. Nasdaq futures up 14. Right back, Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Mike Hart.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart. Tasty Trade S&P Futures up 12. NASDAQ has dropped a little bit here. They're only up, actually, they're unchanged, which is kind of weird. They were just up 12, but now they're unchanged. Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. Hey, I was thinking in terms of the way the Fed's thinking about stuff, I'm going to go back and think that I should have charged more rent to people for, like, the last 5 years, and so I'm going to make it up this month. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the direction of the Fed. I think it's a great idea. Why not?
Yeah, it's a why could I heard that yesterday, and I'm thinking, God, if Milton Friedman was alive, he'd grab the gun and stick it in his mouth. I mean, I just I don't know. But how are you? We had the Engineitas was on yesterday, and he trades by trying to find the mid-sized company that is either. He has a preferred out that people are paying good money on, or a bond, or something, and tries to find those companies, which is kind of different than me because I do the, you know, the index stuff where I try and maneuver the risk around with options, and you do a lot of other stuff. I mean, so how does
I do a lot of other stuff? But I will say I stick to things that are liquid. Liquidity is absolutely essential.
Yes,
when you are trading. Options, even stocks. I mean, today stocks are a penny wide, so for the most part, you can get in and out of stocks very fast. It's liquid, a penny or two for the most part. You know, some stocks are a little wider, the ones that really don't trade. But these mid-size cap companies, they typically trade in the Russell 2000, which are the 2000, not the biggest, but 2000, well, actually, it includes, so it's 2000 largest companies, but when you're talking about 2000, I would say what your friend's looking for is one of those. And so as far as liquidity goes in the options market, I think it's definitely something you should check out. I like trading underlyings that have liquid options markets, and a lot of those smaller mid-sized companies definitely do. But for me, having liquidity on the options as well as on the stocks, it gets rid of some of that, I don't know, wiggle room that you might see in prices. And things become a lot more efficient. So that's my take on going mid-size. As far as like a, from an economic point of view, I think the big companies are really pressing the upper limit of, asset valuation. I mean, they're very, very high, gone very, very high. We know markets don't continue in one track to the upside, but it sure looks the way the Fed's playing, the way, things are just playing out right now. There's really no stopping this pressure to the upside.
Mike, why do you think the inflation last time? I'm dying to find an answer to this question. Somebody might know. I'm hoping it's you. The inflation last time, maybe because it started with the oil, it immediately was into. The Fed was putting money in after the Vietnam War. We went off the gold standard. We did all kinds of stuff, and they were sneaking right. money in to pay for the war and essentially devalued a currency so you could pay debt down with money that was worth less. Okay, but that's been a trick since the Middle Ages, right? It probably never worked, but it's an ongoing trick, right? It's like tapping somebody in the opposite shoulder when you're standing on the other side, right? You're going to turn the wrong way. how many kids have done that, and even adults that have never grown up? But I mean, it is a trick. But now we're unprecedented to the upside on this. And some of the research I've done is in other societies that have gone into, where they've just poured money into the system, that have ended up in inflation. The stock market just went, just does nothing but go right up with it. So, I mean, the one way in the Weimar Republic you could have stayed with the inflation was to have bought stock. And it seems like...
I mean, that makes sense. You know, just as far as adding money to a system inflates asset prices, but it doesn't necessarily inflate wealth. Wealth is not necessarily created out of that.
Well, but except that if you own Amazon and I don't, and the Fed puts money into the system and I don't get a raise, but your Amazon price goes up, you've done much better relative to me. So we're definitely talking about relative costs here. I mean when there was one of the ladies was on CNBC yesterday, and I, you know, whatever. I don't ever want to get asked on again anyway. I didn't like it when I was on, but she was talking about how in March with the virus, the market corrected down, okay, and then all of a sudden, investors realized that these prices were too low. These were good companies. We're going to come out of this stuff and Ma and Pa and everybody, all of a sudden, the guys like you and me, Ma and Pa, Big Shots, whatever, all decided this is too low, the economy's worth more than that, and they started pouring money back in. For God's sake, Mike, I went through my money supply thing yesterday. Between the end of February and in 3 months, the Fed put more money in the system than any other year they ever have in terms of percentages.
To kind of line everything up, I think when you're talking monetary policy and when you're talking from a federal level of the country, I think what happens a lot of times is you have the initial stimulus go in, but it's a very slow process before everything, before the day of reckoning. So things can stay apart, markets can stay irrational longer than you can be solvent, but absolutely. I feel like there's a big connect, and it's much bigger than maybe we've ever seen. I don't know exactly how to test that, but it does have a feeling of we've never been here before.
Well, when I look at the disaster that I've lived through in the 70s and 80s regarding inflation, now there were winners there too, and this is what I'm trying to question you. When I'm stumbling around here, what I'm trying to question is the winners and the losers were very different. And then it was picked up as inflation, maybe because of the oil, right out of the gate. And your long-term rates started to shoot up. So my mom, your grandmom, were able to go into the savings and loan and plunk down their cash. And if the inflation rate was 12, they were getting paid 14. So they were getting the inflation rate plus, which is the way the formula is supposed to work, right?
It's how the math equation adds up. Otherwise, the disconnect begins.
Well, but the market never went up. It did for a while. We touched the Dow 1000, I'm thinking late 60s, and then really didn't go back through really till like 82. So I mean, it was a long way, but the market just sat there and said, why am I putting money in the market? Why am I going to buy Amazon when I get 14% of the corner savings and loan? But now we're not getting any of that. We're not seeing any of that. Do you think it's because the Fed is ambushing the long end? In those days, all they did was buy the short end. They didn't buy the long end. So the long end was free to run up and show the inflation expectation. Where now, I think they're buying all of them. I mean, they're just overwhelming the whole system. I think.
Well,
I'm asking.
You know, and I think part of it is the duration in which maybe investors are looking. But I also think the speed of information has kind of changed things, where you might say, like, this makes sense in a year as opposed to this might make sense in 3 years. Things seem to move a lot faster, and the market's maybe projecting further out than we've ever really projected. I don't know how you, I don't know how, the answer to your question, because that's a really tough one. Things made a lot more sense when you're playing by the games. We're not playing by that math equation anymore. We're not even close. So, how this plays out, I think it can be just pure speculation on anyone's end, because I don't even think the Fed knows where this is going.
Well, we have, like I said, the numbers are the worst year, and I got a big fat graph, so I'm eyeballing a little bit. But it looks to me like the worst year in terms of monetary growth in those days, those bad days, was about 12.5%. This year we're pushing 40. So we're talking three times.
That's
insane. I'm hoping that you have the imagination, being young and strong, to be able to imagine this, how this is going to play out. Because I'll be honest with you, I can't. It can't be going to be as bad as I think it is. At least I hope not.
I hope not too. But how I see it playing out right now is we've had a tremendous rise in asset appreciation. We have Apple trading again over 500. We have Tesla at 2,200. Just insane prices for these. Does it reflect the money in the system? I think there's probably a math equation out there that gets it pretty close to the amount of money that's being dumped in. But a lot of people no longer are investing in Apple, Amazon, Netflix, because the company, they're investing in it seeking returns, just like everyone. You know, one way you can do it is by going into those smaller caps, and maybe they're not looked at as much, and people aren't just dumping their assets into those. So I think you can find still underappreciated assets maybe there. But these are behemoths. And we've talked about this before, Tom. Once the selling begins, the pipe in which the stuff starts flowing, it backs up, because there's just way too many sellers and there are buyers. This, obviously, is the risk. This is why we see put skew. Everyone's afraid of downside movement, but when it happens fast and it happens violently.
Well, why do you suppose, if it's a monetary phenomenon like I think it is, why do you suppose it's not broader? Is it just that's the way people trade now? They zero in on. I mean, how can you have Tesla up 10% a day or 5%, and General Motors, Ford, and Daimler that you can't get, you couldn't move them with a truck.
Right. I think it's a lot of asset. I think it's asset managers trying to, seeking alpha, but there's no, these asset managers aren't necessarily, putting their money into Apple, but they're doing it because when you structure a portfolio, it's really hard to leave the biggest, most liquid stock out of it. If you want to chase returns of the market, you certainly could invest in these, because the correlation is over 9.9, which means it can only go to 1. So we're very, very high in correlation between the big companies. But the correlation, as you get smaller and smaller, begins to decrease, which is what you actually want. You want to have diversification over just the market's return. Everyone's goal should be to beat the market, even though we know that's a very hard and challenging thing, other than to put your money in the market.
Well, I, for one, we do the Protect Index program, and that, but I'm trying to get track records together for a couple of institutions now, and I want to look at our stuff. I can't even, the track record is so different between the Russell, the Qs, and the Spiders. It's like a different time. You'd never guess it was the same 2 years. Because, one's down, one's up to the moon, one's in the middle. It got help.
I think, I think with the advent of ETFs trading these, you can get really, really small in size. You have a lot more people participating in ETFs, which more or less, they act as a sentiment gatherer. So you can use the ETFs. And I think you have a lot of people buying or selling into these baskets on just the broad statement of, I think the market's going to rise dramatically in the short term. Okay, maybe I'll buy some smaller caps. The market has a lot of health and I'm going to get long for the long term. Well, maybe some of the bigger companies are where you want to go.
Well, I was mentioning earlier before you came in that I put some money to work yesterday for a couple clients, and wasn't massive amount, but it was, 350. So that, you know, that's a real that's a reasonable chunk.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I would call that a big one.
Yeah, it's good. But I bought when I ended up buying 1,000 shares of 800 shares of the Q's because these guys both wanted to be in, you know, the ones.
Yeah, well, you want to be where the money is.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah,
that.
Well, so I mean, I ended up protected with some puts and so forth. But you know, I'm sitting here bitching about people.
But
you're
doing it intelligently, using the options market as a risk hedge.
Right, but I also, blindly, I just put out of that 300,000, say, I put 140 of it into five stocks I wouldn't buy with your money. because that's what I did. I mean, those six stocks are what, 48% of the Qs. So I actually,
right.
When I talk about all the idiots buying these things, I was one of the idiots, right?
Well, and you know, we all are. I guess you could say we're all buying into this because you have to, in a sense. You know, the market's forcing our hands here. But you know, it's interesting. We did a study yesterday or a couple days ago, but you know, we have the stock splits in Tesla, Apple, and there's this feeling out there, and I've read it everywhere that, you know, hey, just get long after the split, because after the split, everyone buys, market goes up. Well, we sampled 12-month period, and we looked long-term after a stock split. 12 months later, on average, Apple was up about 9.5%. If you took a random sample of any 12 months for all of the history of Apple here, any 12 months we had a... I'm sorry, that goes back to 2001. Any 12-month random sample period returned 38%. So statistically speaking, the stock split really didn't do much better. You can't even say comparing those two numbers, because the standard deviation of one is too low. You can't statistically say that the stock market's going to rise, or rather that particular stock is going to rise because of the split. I just thought that was interesting as a side note.
As an older dude, let me I'll give you this. You maybe already know this. Maybe this will be new to you. When I was in grad school, that was a long time ago, over at the University of Chicago, they were doing, at that time, they were the only people. Now every school's probably got it, but they actually had every uptick and downtick or something they managed to put in their computer system. So they had the center for the security study and analysis or something like nobody else had. So you had to check into their system if you were another school. But they went back and they tried to figure out if, because there were firms, I haven't seen one in 15 years, that used to track stock splits with the idea that every time there was a stock split, the stock would just run up. So they would, back when you could, you know, when you first started to be able to filter information, like what you guys can do now, you know, and I do with some of the Nigerian group, if there was anything where if a company like increased the potential shares outstanding, guys would run and buy it because they, oh man, the only reason why they're doing that is because it's going to split. And so obviously a split, all it does is you end up with two shares when you stay at one. So it doesn't do anything to the value. So the University of Chicago, these guys, they did a huge study on this from like the 50s on. And it was whether stock splits actually are good for stock prices. And you know what? You know what the conclusion was, Mike?
No, what's that?
They couldn't tell.
Yeah.
And the reason why they couldn't tell is usually when somebody does a stock split, that they never could. Well, not never, but very rarely could find Mike Hart from Hart International coming out and saying, "Tomorrow we're splitting the stock. End of story. End of period. Period. Chop chop." There always was. We had a great quarter, and we're increasing the dividend, and it was never a single message, to the point where you couldn't isolate the stock split from the fact that you had a better quarter, from the fact that you increased the dividend, or you increased your outlook going forward. You could never separate it enough in the announcement to figure out whether the stock split was better or worse, or made any difference at all.
And that's exactly how you should be viewing a stock split. It's not an opportunity to buy necessarily. I mean, anytime I guess something was trading at 500 and it has a psychological effect when you're trading, you know, much, much lower than that, there's a psychological effect that maybe Apple seems cheap here. But as the University of Chicago found out, as we found out, there really is no reason to believe it's going to go up just on a stock split. And from the fact that no wealth, no reason other than, because the company's still worth the same. It's just got less shares outstanding.
Well, what do you make about the part? I've always thought that even though it was non-quantifiable, when I first, in the 80s, I'll say that when I first started, there were people that did some studies on proper stock prices, what if there is such a thing. And they thought that given the where the market was at the time, which is probably, you know, $2,000, $3,000, that the ideal spot for your stock to be was somewhere between 20 and 35 and 40. Because there was a real company. But then if you and I wanted to put a portfolio together for clients, we could get 200 or 300 shares of this, and it would be part of a balanced portfolio. Because in those days, you never the ease of doing an odd lot was not like today. I mean, nobody did odd lots, especially if you did any options with it. But now today, I mean, how the hell could you and I get some Tesla or some Amazon in? What if somebody gave us $1 million, which is a reasonable account, right? It's a pretty good size. How the hell would we get 100 shares of Google or Amazon jammed in there and part of a diversified portfolio? I think it's going to overwhelm the whole portfolio. So there was
It's too much. You know, when you get to $3,000, the idea of investing, you know, all your capital and the idea of diversifying a portfolio, difficult thing. You need a massive portfolio really to be diversifying with, if you're doing 100 shares, obviously. You need a big portfolio to be doing that. Otherwise, it's eating up 90% of your portfolio. At that point, if you're doing Apple, you're probably going to see a little more deviation in the market, but it's going to be pretty close.
Well, and that's why people felt at the time somewhere between 25 and 40 was a reasonable price. It would be easy to get diversified if all the stocks were kind of in that range. But, you know, it doesn't mean you can't do it or whatever. And that's what these indexes are for. They do it for you, right? Pretty much.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I can check right now. Let's say we wanted to sell a call in Tesla because we thought the price is too high. So I would go, let me just pull the phone over here. I'm doing this on my computer right now. So I would go to the 49 days until expiration, October cycle. So 49 days until expiration. And the strike prices, by the way, they start at $50 wide and they go to $100 wide.
Yeah.
I mean, these are huge numbers between the stock price. And I can tell you, this goes all the way up to 4,000. So I could sell the 4,000 calls. Seems like Tesla will never get there. So if it never gets to 4,000, I get to keep all the money, and that's $2,500.
Right.
Problem is, to do this trade, you got to put up $45,000.
Yeah.
So from a return on capital standpoint, it's not that great.
No, but Tesla. I mean, Tesla. I'm looking at the strikes here, and I'm trying to look at the strikes. I think Tesla has strikes that go down to $100.
The shocking thing is, and this is the power of volatility and uncertainty in the market, and people afraid of losing. You're buying puts all the way down there. Now, it's amazing, but there's actually a market.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at these October 16 puts. Now, the stock is 2302, and it's up $63 today. So last night it was 2250, say. The 2190 puts in October are like almost $300. God, that's a number. 21. It's like 10%. It's 10%.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
you put so that's $26,000 for the option.
Yeah,
amazing.
Well, and it's interesting, Mike. I can see you as a guy. Of course, now that you've got the family going, you're probably not into buying Corvettes. But
unfortunately, no.
But one of these days, you'll do your midlife crisis, and I'll see you driving around in some sports car. Hopefully, I'll be around to see it. But I mean, when people look at what risk is, and I talk to clients all the time, probably, and people they have a different view sometimes of stocks versus other assets. Because I mean, if you walk in and you say, "Hey, that Corvette. It's, you know, whatever, 80 grand. I don't know. What does a Corvette cost these days? 80, 90? I don't know, somewhere.
So sounds about right.
So I say, okay, I just happen to have the 80 in my pocket. And I'd say, how much does it cost to insure this thing? So I call my agent up, and he goes, what are you, some kind of moron? The thing's like $8,000 a year or something. And, yeah. So, I mean, I look at the risk, and I say, do I really want this car? I mean, do I have to chain it to the curb, for God's sake? You know, I mean, there obviously is risk in owning this thing. I can't park it anywhere, or God help it, if somebody bumps into it, how do I even get it fixed? Well, when you look at a Tesla, and you say, all right, the stock's here, you know, I got the 2300, and I look at the price of the puts, somebody's telling me that the risk of this stock is pretty friggin' high. Like it doesn't mean you and I shouldn't buy it, but it's the market's judgment of, just like the State Farm insurance guy, it's his judgment of the risk of owning this Corvette. So I may have the money for the Corvette, but I don't want the risk associated with it. So look at this Tesla. Yeah, you know,
yeah. Great observation there.
But I mean, so when you look at some of this stuff, we do a lot of, you know, some people have Apple here. Yeah, some of the stuff that's $100 out of the money, Mike, it's 6 months out. The stuff's trading for $8 to put. So I'm like,
yeah.
And what did you see the print yesterday? Was in the Qs? The Qs are, where the hell are the Qs? The Qs are 280. Somebody bought like how many thousand of the 350s in like January or something?
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, well, it goes to show that, you know, there's a lot of people thinking the same thing, where this has gone up so much. And, you know, typically, this is from studies, I'm not just, this is a legitimate relationship between price and volatility. As the price goes higher, you don't normally see volatility stay there or increase. It's almost always decreasing as you go higher, because no one's afraid on the way up. But now you have a situation where we've gone up too much. There's fear to the downside as we go up. So volatility is actually going up, surprisingly, because we're crashing to the upside in a lot of these.
Yeah, it's almost like a melt up.
It's a melt up, yeah.
S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures are back up now. They're up 9. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Right now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber. I mean, we have Mr. Mike Hart with us as well. Maddie, just so you know, your girl, AV, is now blessed herself. She's the assistant executive producer. Is there such a thing?
I mean, we can go with that, but there's not.
I didn't think so. So she says to me, she must have over-yogaed. I don't know if she was teaching a class or what she's doing. Oh, Tom, you know any chiropractors? I go, yeah, but you just played the guy's commercial.
Okay. Right.
Well, should I go see him? I'll take you out there. So I took her out there yesterday. They loved her. She loved them. Oh, she's all happy. She's talking to the other girl about yoga. I'm like,
it's our guys at ChiroMed.
Yeah.
Played the commercial not that long ago.
And they, she said, I feel so much better. I can't believe it. You know, that guy's strong. Nice guy, but whatever. And, anyway, she said, do you know any chiropractors? Yeah, you just played the commercial.
That's a good plug for our guys.
Absolutely.
Head down to, what are they, in Orland?
Yeah, we went down there, but of course they loved her. I mean, you know, what's not to like? I mean, I told them is don't tell her, don't say that she's Russian. She's Ukrainian, or else she'll come up fighting. Anyway, U.S. personal income up 0.4% in July versus 0.2%. Those were the numbers that came out. And we got the Dow futures up 155. NASDAQ futures up. Well, NASDAQ futures aren't changed. S&Ps are up 10.50. Over in Europe, again, it's really quiet. DAX down 18.1%. FTSE up 6. Call that flat. CAC run up 2. Call that flat. So that's a non-event over there. Asia, Nikkei down 326. 1.4. They had a big update this week. And again, they are, I don't know if they found out last night or I think today is the first trading day since their Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, who's got to be one of their longest serving guys, is resigning due to health reasons, which is interesting. I mean, I hope they had showed a picture of him. He looked like he was okay, but obviously he's not. Shanghai down 53, 1.6%.
If we showed a picture of you, would you look okay?
Why not? I look okay. Just let me dress up a little bit.
There you go.
Hang Seng up 140.6%. You don't want me in the middle of like a softball swing. They'd say the guy's dying of it or something. Bonds, 0.75 on the 10-year. It's as high as it's been in a while. The Bund minus 0.40 and the Japan minus, positive 0.06. Again, highest in a while. Oil down a penny, so nothing going on there, 43.03. Brent down 4 cents, 45.05. Not much move at all with this hurricane going flying through the Gulf and hitting up some refineries. I think we have excess capacity just about. And the refineries pretty much got dodged. So the refineries, were not hurt like they thought they might be. Natural gas down a penny. RBOB is actually right where it was when this whole thing started, 129, so it hasn't moved hardly at all. Gold up $38, 1970. Silver up 69 cents. That's a big move. 2.5%, 27.89. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Very quiet now on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That earlier car fire on the inbound Stevenson at County Line Road is all clear, so that's good news. No issues coming in on the Ryan or I-57. Bishop Ford looking good, too. Eisenhower's been quiet all morning. Northside expressways have been very quiet. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions. So we're off to a great start here. Those couple of crashes we had in the western suburbs are all clear as well in the last hour. Only crash on the screen is up north. Route 21 at Winchester Road, there is an accident, so you'll have to navigate around that. But everything else is good out there. Weather today, our last hot and steamy day for a little while before we have a pleasant weekend. Today, a humid and a high of 90 and some rain later on. Right now, it's mostly clear and 78 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 112 today. Right now, it's clear and 90. In sports, quiet night in baseball last night. Cubs and White Sox had scheduled off days. Cubs are at Cincinnati tonight. That's 6:10 first pitch. White Sox host the Kansas City Royals at 7:10. Diamondbacks were postponed last night. They'll host the Giants at 6:40 p.m. Arizona time this evening. And lastly, as I was called out on Twitter for not mentioning this in hour one, but the BMW Championship is taking place just down the road, Chief, at Olympia Fields. And day one action has Hideki Matsuyama at the top of the leaderboard. He shot a 3-under 67 yesterday.
Only three people are under par.
Yeah, Tyler Duncan is one of them. He's the only American under par at 2-under. And Mackenzie Hughes, the Canadian, is at 1-under. Everyone else is either even or above par heading into day two, which will tee off at about 11:30 a.m. Chicago time. Chief.
Hey, do me a favor. Figure out what the yardage is at that thing that they're playing today, will you?
It's 7,366 yards.
With a par 70? That is outstanding.
Yep. Well, a $9.5 million purse, so you got to make them earn it.
I played that course, and I was in a scramble, thank God. All the two people who were playing were worse than me.
Did you keep it in the 70s?
Yeah, something miraculously.
Nice.
Somehow miraculously. And it had to be a 35-mile-an-hour wind. That course, if you were a member there and you're in your 60s, how do you just wander out and play that course on like a regular day? It's just, hey, I just go out and I'll go shoot 18. It's not like going to Hickory Hills, for God's sake.
Well, I assume it's a little shorter for the normal folks, isn't it?
Well, but they have another course. I think they have a course, and I think they got a 9. They have at least two courses. I
mean, yeah, I've never been out there. I'd love to go.
It's really something. If I start playing again,
I've actually golfed there before. It's amazing. It's a really nice course. And I'm a terrible golfer, so it's not a beginner's course, as
no.
I found out.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. But, yeah, over 7,000 yards, par 70, that's tough for anybody.
Well, first hole, the wind was coming out of north. It was probably 35 miles an hour. First hole is like 6:05 from the whites.
Yikes.
And, you know, come on.
Hi, is this a par 6?
I'm like, yeah, really. I mean, Chicago has some of the most, I don't think there's any place in the country, Mike, that has more spectacular golf courses in Chicago. I'd make that bet to anybody.
I've flown all over the U.S. and you look at golf courses when you're going into towns or out of towns, and there are a lot around Chicago. That's for sure.
But I mean, these country club courses that you really can't get on. I mean, just take Olympia, Medina, Butler, Skokie, yeah. Evanston. I mean, you just rattle them off. Every one of them is nicer than the next, right? You ever get a chance to play Butler?
No.
I
haven't either.
That is special. I broke 90 at Butler. I was the happiest man on earth that day. I shot an 89. And of course, I was playing real well, and I tried to...
Of course, he was fluffing his ball and had a few mulligans. But.
No, we were playing with some accountant guy, and we're playing for money.
Playing straight, okay.
So get a load of this. I get to the last hole, and this is back when you couldn't hit the ball as far as you can now. So I spanked this drive. And there's just nothing but water. Like, I had to carry 200 yards of water. So in those days, I mean, so I go, I've been playing pretty good. I pull out the 2-iron. If I catch this on the nose, I'm going to land right on this green, and I could birdie this thing, and I'll be the happiest man on earth. In the water. So I ended up with a 6 on the last hole, and I could have had like an 87. But, they got a couple of island greens and stuff. I got my ass saved, and there's one hole is like 185, like, and it's an island green. So I hit the wrong club or something, and I scalded over the thing. Thank God it hit the lip of the trap. Caught it instead of going into the water. Rolled down into the bottom of the trap, and I up and downed it for a 3. But it could easily have been like a 10. But, I mean, you know, a little luck is good, right? You know, you run into bad luck, so you need a little good luck once in a while.
Have you ever played a Wynn golf course? I heard back in the day, Wynn had some of the best golf courses. And actually, Steve Wynn, back when he was really working it, he had some amazing golf courses out in Vegas.
One of the guys, our original place we cleared through way back in the day was Mesro. And then when Jimmy Tyree died, they got out of the correspondent business. But, I mean, to this day, I miss those guys. I mean, Mesro is a great place. Jimmy Tyree was one of the most fascinating human beings I've ever met. And he basically resurrected Marist High School and put them on the track, made sure they went co-ed, put money into the place, and he turned that bus around. He did it for all kinds of places. He was just one of those kinds of guys. Well, one of the guys who worked for him loved to go out and gamble. He loved to gamble. He made a lot of money. He was one of the guys that was a correspondent. You know, he'd run around and try and get correspondents to work, whatever you want to call that job, Mike. Liaison. And he would go out there. He always wanted to go to Vegas, but I'm always working. He would go. I think if he stayed at the was it the Rio? One of the places you stayed, they had their own private course. It was a Wynn course. And he would go play there. He said it was spectacular. Just spectacular.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at the price of Wynn, as far as just transferring over here for a second. The price of Wynn before this whole thing went down, they had to shut down their casinos and their hotels. Wynn went down from $150 to just under $40. So
yeah.
Big sell-off, obviously. But maybe it's the golf course is bringing it back up because it's at 87 right now. So it's made, considering the industry they're in, it's made a pretty decent comeback.
Mike, good thing you said that because you reminded me of a question I absolutely wanted to ask you. It's been a question that's been hanging in the air all week. And I honestly don't know the answer to it. Matter of fact, I'm not close to it. So maybe it seems like, and where I've got this itch to ask this question is, one of my buddies called me the other day, and he worked for Ticketmaster. Got taken over. Well, those guys are now what? Life, what the hell's the name of the place? LYV. I'll get it here. Live Nation.
Live Nation.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So,
which is a horrific company, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, he was,
yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Anyone that's ever dealt with them, just to go to a concert, I mean, they're a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, he would tell you that because he worked for them a couple times. Anyway, he says the stock was way up there. It plummeted down, just like the Wynn thing, and then came back, 25, 30, 40%, like a lot of these places have done, airlines and other kinds of places, cruise lines. And his point is, they're losing millions a day. How long can they hang here without...
I don't think you have to be an economist, or a financial wizard to know that's not good. I mean, it's just not good.
But there's got to be, I'll say... tens of these companies that I can almost name, and I mean, and you can probably name more. I mean, you're talking about. These casinos aren't making any dough; they're draining by the day. I mean, these cruise lines aren't making any dough. The airlines, God help them. What about these hotels in downtown Chicago? I mean, how long can they? Are they not going to pay their tax bill? Or what's got to give?
The entire business model broke down completely, and the hotels that I think are going to survive are the ones that adapt very, very quickly to the environment that we're in. So, I think a lot of these aren't going to make it. That's my thought.
Well, we yesterday, I don't know if you saw it, Maddie, because Maddie's bride has been and still keeps an eye on the convention business. Next year, there's 300,000 people come in, or whatever it was, whatever the number is, maybe it was 30. One of the comic place's biggest conventions is the dentist, right, Manny? It's not their biggest, but it's got to be around the top 10.
Yeah.
The American College of Surgeons is one of the biggest, but they bleeped out, and they're talking about May of 2021, and they just canceled.
Mm-hmm. I did really well.
Yeah, I don't think the government's got enough money, Mike. I mean, how are all these places? I mean, the Conrad Hilton, what is it? What do you think there's people in there at night? 10%, 20%? Who's coming to Chicago for the weekend? You can't go anywhere. Nothing's open. You're liable to get a riot. You're liable to run into a riot. I don't see it. I mean, we're end of August. If you and I are doing this in Thanksgiving and we're right here, I don't know where all the money's going to come from. Do you? I mean, I don't have any way to quantify it. I'm not going to say short the stocks. I'm not going to say anything, but it just seems very eerie to me. It's like the phony war or something. You know, it's something weird.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Well, this is like a ghost rally. No one really knows where it's coming from, but we are rallying. But, you know, the day of reckoning, and that's when, you know, people start making the connection of this is going to be maybe longer term than we thought. I don't think the market's reflecting a longer term outlook right now, because I think longer term, if we continued on this path, there's economically, there's no reason to expect everything to continue to rise without any reason other than there's more money in the system, more money in the system. You can't just keep doing this. We mentioned this last time we talked, Tom, it was like 2 weeks ago. We talked about the idea of you put money into the system so much, eventually asset prices rise. If you don't see your wages increase, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And I don't see any, I mean, I've said this three times a week, so I won't go into it again. When I started in the business world, that was one of my jobs, was to do all the calculations on the inflation for a railroad car contractor, two of them actually. And that's what I did. But it's going to take a long time. Do you think, out of all the people, the median wage being $36,000 or $37,000 now, I'm going to say nobody under $50,000, I'm going to say nobody under 75 has a cost of living adjustment built into either their company policy or their contract. None of those people have contracts. So, I mean, what are we doing here? If we pop a 10% inflation this year, nobody's going to get a raise.
Not this year, no. Probably.
And it won't happen for, I'll bet this thing, in those days, if I can't pinpoint it, it's been so long ago, Mike, but I'm going to say the inflation problem started in, you know, I was in college, so 73, 72 with the Arab oil embargo. And I'm going to say that the first union probably didn't get their wage, their cost of living in their contract to 77, maybe. 76,
you know. You know, when you look at the charts, it is around there. Everything has super spiked, asset inflation, asset prices, and the super spike really began around there. I mean, that's when you really, really saw it kick in, and now it's looking exponential.
Yeah, and it's not rising all boats. I mean some of the houses a little bit, certainly not your downtown buildings, not them.
No way.
You can't give one of those away. You got to wonder when does the, Mike, when you see something like this happen, which I've never seen before, and you're younger than me, so the interplay between the market, the economy, and the individual people, I mean, at what point are we going to have, you know, the restaurants in Will County that the governor just shut down for 2 weeks because of it, where somebody's going to say, hey, bleep you, come and arrest me. You can't. I was just at one of those places last week. Every time you move, the lady was scrubbing down the bar and the table. Those people have done everything. You can't begin to say that somebody got infected in one of these restaurants. And yet, we just, oh, we're going to shut all the restaurants down for 2 weeks just for laughs. I mean, when is somebody going to say, up yours, I'm staying open, come get me? I mean, we're all.
Well, you know what I think? What I think needs to happen first is the businesses need to respond better, because it's not enjoyable to go to a restaurant if you're going to be feeling like you're in a hospital.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So somehow the model has to change. And it's a difficult situation because of social distancing is really the hardest part of this equation. But, because washing your hands, face thing, that's pretty easy. You can just, but the, you know, social distancing, how do you build a business around social distancing when your whole model was based on social gatherings?
Well, and you also, where do you, I mean, again, I'm not, you know, ragging against the mask. I'm not doing this or anything, because enough people are fighting about that. But the stuff, I'm sort of, believe it or not, Mike, so many people write about the coronavirus, and we've talked about it so much, that I'm like central clearinghouse here for every study. I'll get it an hour after tomorrow. And the weird part is, they finally, they've asked some guy who's been, you know, everybody's got a scientist, right? So this guy, they said, what does it really take to catch this thing? And he said, it takes, now, not that you can't get it by, you know, randomly or something. I mean, you can always do that. You're, you know, somebody's going to get hit in the head with an asteroid today somewhere on this planet, right?
Right.
So he goes, you got to be over 15 minutes in a closed area with people who have it, with the ventilation not so good. And if you're in an area like that, the mask probably doesn't do you any good anyway, because everybody's got a mask. And even though the mask is trapping 30% of the stuff, if you're in a room like that, 70% is plenty, you're going to get it. You know, if you're,
well, it goes back to your idea of risk, the Corvette. You know, how much risk is society willing to take around this?
Right.
And when that percentage gets, I don't know what that point is, but there's going to be a certain percentage that it gets really, really low, and the chances get really, really tiny. That's an acceptable risk, I think.
Well, if you're 25 years old now, they're telling us in every way, shape, or form, the risk is acceptable to them right now because they're not even sick.
Right.
You know, and
well, yeah, I mean, they're saying that, so they're, you know, whatever it is, I think they don't, obviously, society can't just shut down around this. And, you know, when we talk about the economics of it, the economy, it by necessity needs to run and do its thing to produce, you know, produce wealth in the system. So it's got to run. And how and where and what it transfers to, I don't know. But I think what we're looking at is a massive shift that is happening on a tiny, tiny amount of time.
Well, and we have people, I mean, you look at some of the weaknesses in the system. I the idea of public paid employees working for home, making rules for other people, how they behave on a golf course. I essentially want whatever that person's being paid. The get a load of this. The other day, I'm waiting for Maddie out in the back, and somebody comes up with this flash that they talk about. I don't know. Hopefully, you don't have anybody in your family in a nursing home or whatever. But the torture they're putting those people through, it's inhumane. So would they come out a big study? I forget who the hell did it, but somebody, you know, paid a lot of money for this thing. It said they found out that after it's people, especially older people, I think anybody, but especially older people that are being kept in isolation, degrade both physically and mentally faster than if they're not. Like, mm-hmm. I hope we didn't pay too much for that study. I mean, is there anybody that wouldn't have guessed that was the outcome?
Yeah, well, that's what I would, you know, you would assume. This is having a traumatic effect, especially on the community where they say you've got a good chance of dying if you catch this. I mean, that alone is psychologically trauma. And then on top of it being stuck in a place where they say it's easily contagious. You don't have to run a study for that, for sure.
One of my best friends, go nameless, been a guest on the show a couple times. His mom's in a nursing home and she's not doing real well. He goes out to see her, or actually his brother went out to see her, which has been a big deal. You couldn't see her for a while. But now they'll, like, wheel her outside, and if you're 10 feet away, you can, like, you know, say, hey, I'm a... They wheel her out, and she's nonverbal now. They never called him. We're talking about a place that's, like, $7,000 a month. When did she become nonverbal? A couple of weeks ago. Weren't you going to tell us?
Really sad outcome. Yeah. Of, you know, the human tragedy of this is part of the problem. I mean, part of the problem, and then, you know, maybe something good comes out of it. I don't know.
I can't. It's almost to the point now, Mike. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about the volatility because you're the expert on that in the market and how to play the VIX here, because I think it's getting kind of low. But that's just me. You'll tell me I'm nuts. It should be lower. But how do you the people charge? How does somebody who you're sending them a $7,000 check to say you can't come see your mother? I mean, how does somebody who's getting paid to stay at home opine on whether other people should go to work? I mean, you can't do
well,
it.
Well, you know, if you look at the market, and I look at BKD, I've traded this in the past. I don't know why I traded it, but I know it just popped up in my head, so I pulled up the chart. I haven't looked at it in years. Brookdale Senior Living. It's one of the biggest, if I remember correctly. It went from $10 to $2, and it hasn't gone up at all. So the nursing home industry, if you go off of just this one stock, I think it got hit and it never recovered, like wind recovered, but it never recovered beyond, you know, a couple cents.
Well, but one of the biggest in that industry, I believe, is the Pritzkers. Now, do I want him as a governor telling people you can't go visit people in his places? Maybe they don't want people in there. The few times that I've known people in nursing homes, my stepfather was in one for a while, or my mom when she was sick in the hospital, I was there, or my brother was there, I'm going to say there wasn't a day we weren't there. You were an advocate. I mean, I want to know if somebody's got a black eye. I want to know if the bed smells. I don't trust any of these people. For them to say it's not safe for me to come in there, bull bleep. You make it safe. I'll wear a mask, whatever you want me to do. I'll wear an astronaut's outfit if you want me to, but don't tell me I can't come.
That whole thing is you might have it, and no one knows that you have it, and you're not showing symptoms. The older generation needs to have interaction. You can't just lock them in a room.
Hey, Vix, 25. Buy or sell, bud?
At 25, I'm buying. I'm not selling the VIX because here's the thing. We have a presidential election. We have the coronavirus, as we just talked about, and we have assets that are making no sense. So if anything happens, I don't think it's going to drop below 20. It's trading at 25 right now. Or no, I'm sorry. Hang on a second.
It's 25. I'm looking right at it. It's 25.
Actually, it is trading 25.17. So it seems like going back to the beginning of April, there's a floor around 20, and that's a high floor. If you look last year, we're talking like 10 on the VIX, but now it's just sitting at 20. I think there is sort of the risk of the market right now until the president gets over or we solve some of these corona issues. I don't think it's going below 20. I think there's too much risk out there. And I don't see the American public getting complacent about a risk that's making them stay home, not go out, not travel. I'm a buyer because if anything happens that is unexpected, which I expect the unexpected here, it's going higher.
If there's no result in the election for 2 weeks, where does it go?
It goes off the charts.
Yep,
I agree. You know, 60. Yeah. Who knows?
Mike, thank you very much, buddy. You're great as hell, as usual, and you answered some stuff that I can't answer, so thank you. SP Futures
you.
Up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 13. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.